Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're delving into the UBS Global Real Estate Bubble Index 2017, the Wealth Management CIO's annual report analysing residential property prices in 20 select urban areas around the world. We'll hear from experts in some of those key markets on the unique circumstances driving the sector where they are, as well as gauging the shifting trends that are shaping investment strategy globally in this space. We start with Dean Turner, economist and director in the UBS UK CIO. What's the rationale, Dean, behind the Global Real Estate Bubble Index, and what does it seek to set out?
So the aim of the report is to highlight amongst the 20 cities that we cover globally areas where we think there could be the potential for a housing market bubble. And what we do to gauge that is we look at a number of factors such as price to income, mortgage to GDP, country indicators that are quite specific in terms of city to country indicator. And we combine those to get an assessment of where we think that there is the potential for a bubble to be emerging within any of those cities. Now, I would emphasize that, you know, just because a particular city is within bubble territory on our index, it doesn't necessarily mean that bubble is about to crash, but it might tell us something about the likelihood of potential future gains and crucially, the risks around investing within those markets.
Next, we asked Matthias Holzhey, head of Swiss real estate investment at UBS Wealth Management in Zurich, to remind us of the principles behind it and the objectives of him and his team working on the report.
We're looking for symptoms of unusual behavior in housing markets or financial centers. And we apply the same methodology across the world, across all these 20 global cities. And when we get a high score in our model, then this is just implies that the city behaved in an unusual way compared to its own history. So, and that is and was, in a sense, a warning signal that a correction is more likely than if the housing market behaves in a more standardized way, in a sense. And so you have to have a closer look if you get strong warning signals. And what we observe now, and that's also the reason why we publish this on an annual basis, is that cities continue to outperform countries. The house prices in cities continue to outperform countries, and now for the seventh consecutive year, we're seeing more cities double-digit price growth. For example, this year in Munich, Toronto, Amsterdam, Hong Kong, and so on. And this implies that house prices would double every seventh year, which is clearly not sustainable. So that's why there seems to be a clear rise in bubble risk, which implies a clear rise in a severe correction risk.
John Wallachin, strategist at UBS Wealth Management Americas, joins the fray too to explain exactly why UBS is so excited to bring this to global attention each year.
If you think about real estate, particularly the housing side of real estate, it is something that is not only crucially important to economies, whether here in the U.S. or in most major developed markets, but it's something that the vast majority of, whether it's, again, people here in the United States or and people in developed markets, play in one form or another, whether it's through home ownership in the States here, it's about 63%, or it's through owning a condominium or renting an apartment. So I think it's something that is not only a very, very large impact in the economy, but something that resonates with people. You know, I think that's one of the reasons that it was an initial interest of us. Now, I think you asked me a good question, and it's important to understand what this index is, but also what it isn't. And let me start with what it isn't. This is not meant to be predictive of, oh my God, there's going to be a housing crash. And I think, you know, and that's why sometimes the use of the word bubble is a little challenging. But the point is, it's to look at markets both compared to themselves historically and compared to other markets. And so what this is looking to do is looking to say, okay, and you know, I'll use Toronto because it took the number one spot this year. What was it about Toronto that gave it such a big move? And I think a lot of it had more to do with where Toronto has been relative to itself historically. Like if you look at the more expensive markets around the world, and Hong Kong has historically been one of them, Hong Kong, London, Paris have certainly been among the more expensive markets. So that's why it really jumped out. But so understanding what it isn't, this is not a predictor of, oh, well, prices are going to crash, but more what it is to understand how dynamics within and across markets have changed. And if one is an investor, and this is the key differentiator between an investor and somebody who's buying a home for shelter, if you're an investor, understanding, because one of the things we focus very heavily on is risk-reward relationships. So this is also pointing out that the risk-reward relationship in Toronto is less, certainly less favorable than it is in, say, Chicago, where the housing market has been a laggard for a number of years. So I think it's important to put it in context and understand how this should be used.
Let's consider a global trend of near constant demand for particular areas in particular cities. We asked Matthias Holzhey, is there a blurring of vision because of almost fantastical notions of ever greater prices?
Yes, I mean, that's a very strong narrative, and you can justify whatever pricing case you like with this kind of narrative. Okay, if you believe that global increasing wealth will just create some continuing excess demand for top locations, then you can pay whatever prices you like. But that's not what we saw in the data in the past. Okay, what we see is that cities, especially top locations, have systematically stronger corrections than countries. So that seems to be that expectations are really prone to exaggerations. People get really over-optimistic in boom periods. So there is a much higher correction risks at the moment in those cities than on the countrywide level because of these over-optimistic expectations people are having. Because everyone is betting on that billion of Chinese millionaires will bail them out. But it's probably not going to happen.
On that point about China, which speaks to this superstar cities narrative, has that received extra impetus in the last couple of years?
The story is very compelling now because you had this price, average price in the cities rose by, say, 30% in the past 5 years, and country prices just rose by 10%. So on average, even the average of all these 20 cities increased much, much more. So you had even your best price expectations were fulfilled in the last couple of years. And then you have a lot of stories about foreign demand pushing up prices. You see this rise in global, I don't know, 50% more global billionaires in the past couple of years, global wealth increasing by 50% in the last 5 years. So you have a lot of support in the data for that kind of story. But then if you have a closer look, you see that cannot be the foreigners alone which drive prices, because the number of transactions which is conducted by non-resident foreigners is typically rather small. This holds even for Vancouver, this holds for Sydney, this holds also, and even more for London or Manhattan, where this is in a 10% range maybe of transactions. 20% for new build condominiums maybe, but in the overall market, the size is just small. You can also, an interesting case study is also Vancouver in that regard. They introduced a new tax on foreign buyers in August 2016. Before August, they had like 13% in the months before the blockchain was attacked. 13% of all transactions were conducted by non-resident foreigners because everybody was just rushing in before the tax came into effect. Then this number dropped to close to zero, but prices continued to rise. I mean, they rose much, much slower, but they continued to rise. We did not have correction, so local demand kept prices high. And this local demand is obviously also tied to the extremely low mortgage rates at the moment.
Matthias Holzhey. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll get more on these specific regional pictures next with our experts. Let's take more of a look at the varied regional pictures next. In London, Dean Turner. Dean, drilling down into the London case, where we're both sitting right now, in fact, what do we learn about the situation here in the capital at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if we take some of the numbers, just the raw numbers to start with, in London, we can see that inflation-adjusted house prices are almost 45% higher than 5 years ago, and are still some 15% higher than before the financial crisis hit us, which was a decade ago now. But we've got to put that against what's actually happened to real incomes in the UK. Now, as we know, it's been a period of sluggish growth, even since we've come out of the recession in the UK. And against that backdrop, we've really seen in a situation where real incomes over that period have actually declined by 10% since 2007. So there is some disconnect between underlying income growth and house price growth. Now, one of the things that we have to bear in mind is that there are many factors that support the house prices, and it isn't just incomes alone. A few of the things that have supported the UK housing market has been the extraordinarily low interest rates that we've been enjoying in the UK. So servicing costs on debt have certainly been a lot more manageable. And also we must remember with London that it's a very international market. So the slide that we've seen in sterling, and especially relative to where we were a year ago, is probably another factor that is supporting the housing market here. That said, you know, we do still highlight that London remains in bubble territory. We have seen some weakness over the past 12 months, but that said, the city does still seem to be in bubble territory.
Let's look at the North American market then. And it's interesting in the report, John, there's this idea of a sort of two-speed North American performance. And there's some quite striking comparisons, whether, as you say, Toronto, if we look to San Francisco, LA, New York, Chicago, maybe at this other end of the spectrum. There are some really interesting narratives, aren't there, in the market where you're sat right now?
Yeah, there are. And, you know, whether you want to call it a bifurcated or even a trifurcated market, I think there's certainly a lot of different dynamics going on. And I think one of the big dynamics that is going on is that a lot of foreign capital has been migrating, particularly to the West Coast. And a lot of it's been from China, but it's also been from countries beyond China. And so I think that's one of the reasons you've seen this big push move up in LA in terms of where it's ranked, because a lot of that money that historically has gone to New York, San Francisco, Miami, has started to find its way into the LA area. And if you go to LA, I mean, you can see it if you just walk around the area. So I think you've got the foreign capital angle. New York has always been a big driver of foreign capital. And then you've got, you know, no shock here, there's a high degree of correlation between job creation, types of jobs being created, and strength of housing markets. Now, San Francisco, everybody knows what's going on in the tech world in San Francisco. But what a lot of people don't realize is if you go to the LA area, you'll see, like, if you go to the, they call it Silicon Beach, it's down by Playa Vista. There's a tremendous amount of technology boom, and the media industry is booming in LA. And then you come to New York. New York has historically been thought of as a financial services economy. It is a much more diversified economy in terms of technology and in terms of social media. And so we've always been well diversified, I think, in terms of healthcare and things like that. But there is a huge biotech boom that's going on here in New York. And that's been very quiet to a lot of people outside the real estate industry. So I think you've got a lot of different dynamics driving it. I think, to me, the most interesting question, I think one that's a little bit challenging to answer, is why is Chicago lag so much? And, you know, I've been looking at the Chicago market for a long time, and, you know, I can't help but wonder that the fiscal problems in the state of Illinois are not part of the problem. It's not to say that New York and California are not high tax states. They certainly are. But Illinois' fiscal situation is particularly acute, and I can't help but wonder if that's been a contributor to the lagging housing market, particularly relative to some of the other markets.
Back to Dean Turner now. Dean, let me ask you about another, well, it's an almost sort of unavoidable factor when we talk about London, and that's the prevailing political mood, if you like. There's broad uncertainty, and I guess anyone who's been tuning into party conference season over the last couple of weeks has very much had that confirmed. Of course, we had the Brexit vote back in June of 2016. How much does that shape the scene? Presumably that uncertainty prompts UBS to take a more, what, cautious positioning?
I think that's a very fair assessment of the current situation, the political uncertainty, not just Brexit related. We must also bear in mind it's also in relation to the leadership of the current government is something that is weighing on, is likely to weigh on sentiment towards investments in the UK. But another factor as well that I would highlight as perhaps less politically related but is likely to have an impact is what's actually happening to tax policy in the UK. I don't think we should underestimate the impact that the sharp rise in stamp duties that we've seen in recent years has had on demand. Now, looking ahead, I think that now we've had the tax changes, it's unlikely we'll see further increases. That's perhaps one factor that we can be a little bit less concerned about. But certainly until we have some clarity on Brexit, whether that comes in 1 month, 3 months or a year or so, we don't have a really good idea on that yet. Until we get that clarity, that's going to be a factor that is likely to weigh on sentiment. But then again, you know, it's not all, I would have to emphasize that the outlook isn't all bad. And the reason being is that the economy does seem to be holding up better than many feared. We're for one, not expecting a recession in the UK anytime soon. And crucially, neither is the Bank of England, who seem confident enough in the outlook that it's quite likely that they'll start to nudge up interest rates pretty soon.
Let's take a final thought from Matthias Holtzai on the European picture.
If you look at continental Europe, we've seen practically all cities have now rising risk scores, even though they're not in all cases in bubble risk, but still we see this rising risk scores. And what's very important is just that mortgage rates are in close to each city half as high as they were 5 years ago. So if you look at monthly payments people have to make, they have not risen actually. So people can still buy and have the same same monthly costs in continental Europe if they buy a home. Even in Munich, this number stayed practically the same. It's rose slightly, but it's still in a sense affordable based on this extremely low rate. Especially if the local mortgage regulations do not foresee that you have to amortize your mortgage. That's something which is also important and helps to keep prices at the current levels.
And a final takeaway, too, on the U.S. picture in this space from John Wallachin.
The question I get a lot is why does foreign capital like to come to the United States? Or why does it continue to come to the United States? And because there's certainly, you know, many great cities to invest in around the world. And I think it comes down to really three things. We still have the most stable political system in the world. We have the best property laws in the world, and that should not be underestimated. And we have the deepest capital markets in the world. And until those things change, I think the U.S. is going to get more than its fair share of money invested in the real estate world.
And that's John Wallachin bringing us to the end of this 157th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.